This copyrighted podcast is presented by the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council. The opinions and views shared by those of non-paid guests on the business of blueberries are those of our guests and do not represent the views, positions, or policies of the USHBC. The blueberry industry is like no other. Passionate, resilient, and innovative. This podcast is your source for the latest information on the management, markets, research, and technology related to blueberry production. This is the business of blueberries. Here's your host, President of the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council, Casey Cronquist.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Business of Blueberries, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to the blueberry industry. Today, I'm very pleased to be joined by an international leader in the berry business, Jorge Andres Varela. Jorge is the president of Agroberries, a vertically integrated producer and marketer of berries with a large presence throughout the world. They also have a portfolio of proprietary and exclusive berry genetic varieties. I certainly want to ask Jorge more about Agroberries as well as Berry Fresh, their marketing arm here in the U.S., and their recent investment into Berry World. We'll hear all about that and Jorge's thoughts on what it means and for where this industry is going into the future. So Jorge, thanks for joining me on the Business of Blueberries.
No, thank you, Casey. Very special to be here speaking with you. And let me just brief you about Agroberries and Berry Fresh and other things, exciting things that are going on. Agroberries is close to be 30 years old. We started in 1996, so we'll turn 28 this year. We started as blueberry growers and raspberry growers in Chile. And through the years, we expanded internationally in order to have like a better supply of product year-round for our customers. So we moved in 2001 into Argentina. That was earlier than Chile, so we could have like extended season, Argentina and Chile. Soon after, we purchased a percentage of a company called Berry Fresh in the U.S., which is a marketing arm in the Americas. Berry Fresh was already having a supply from growers in Canada, U.S., and Mexico, and we had Argentina and Chile fruit. So when we joined Berry Fresh, which we acquired a small percentage at the beginning, and we ended up, right now we hold 100% ownership of that company. So it was a good fit because of the Southern Hemisphere fruit, Northern Hemisphere fruit, so we could offer year-round to the consumers. And that was really a flipping point in Agroberry's history. So that made it different. We vertically integrated into the market from our farms in Chile directly into retailers. So that was very interesting and allowed us to continuous growth through the years.
Well, let me just go back a little bit here with you personally, because it's an incredible run. How did you get involved with the berry business? When did Jorge jump into this business, and how long have you been working in the berry patch?
Yeah, that's an interesting story because I'm a civil engineer, so I don't have an agriculture background or nothing to do with berries. When I left university, my first job was working in a company called Anagra in Chile, which was owned at that time by the New Zealand Dairy Board. One of the companies that was in the portfolio of Anagra was Soprole, which is a big dairy company in Chile. So then the New Zealand Dairy Board bought this company, and I started working as an analyst, just of analyzing like different options for expansions and new business development, basically. And one of the things they decided to do was a freezing plant in southern Chile to freeze vegetables. And soon after, it became a berry freezer company as well. So they were doing freezing raspberries, blackberries. Blueberries were just getting started at the time. So I moved from Santiago, Chile, where I was born and raised, to southern Chile, to Chillán. And I met, many people, but within the people I met were two great guys, growers, Manuel Romero and Pedro Carrasco at that time. The company later on was sold, and they offered me to start an export business. They were growers, so I moved back to Santiago. I started basically running commercial operations and running the company from Santiago, and they were growing. So we started shipping their product. That was at the very beginning. Soon after, we started buying our own farms and increasing the acreages we had. So that's how we started. So, I was back in Santiago soon after that, and from there on, I've been running the company. And it's been a good run, and it's been really interesting. And now we are very globally. We have farms in different areas of the world. We grow in in Chile, in Peru, in Mexico, in the U.S. We just started in Morocco as well. So we have farms all over the place. We are, I would say, a really global company and allows us to see different realities and offer consumers a great eating experience.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, just hearing you start off by saying that you're a civil engineer by trade or by education, looking back, I mean, you know, that had to have been a crossroads for you to move from, you know, what you thought you went to school for. And now, you know, today, looking back on how different that track took you and just how large Agroberries has gotten. And could you give us some context in terms of growth over the years? You know, how has Agroberries grown? You know, like you were saying, I think initially a couple farms and then you've been acquiring farms. But what has been, you know, your overall sense of growth or percentage of growth over time?
Yeah, well, obviously we started just shipping, as I was telling you, the fruit from these two partners. Today, Agroberries owns like 3,000 hectares through the world. The largest area is Peru, then Mexico, Chile, and then Morocco and the U.S. are smaller operations. Other than those 3,000 hectares, we also have growers. So we represent growers, strategic growers through the world that complement our own production. I would say last year, I think we did close to 50,000 tons of product year-round. That includes raspberries and blackberries, which we grow in Mexico as well. 80% of our production is blueberries. We started with blueberries and it's still our main commodity, but we do also do raspberries and blackberries out of Mexico.
And how do you see those two other berries growing in relationship to blueberries? Just, you know, we don't talk a lot about the other berries often, but what's your sense of how within Agroberries, Berry Fresh, that you see the two other berries growing alongside your blueberries?
Yeah, well, blueberries have had an exceptional growth through the last 10 or 20 years. It's been just amazing. When I started the business, I think raspberries was by far larger than blueberries. And now blueberries is many times larger than raspberries. Blackberries is a smaller one, but I would say for the three of them, as long as you have the right genetics, I think there's a great opportunity for growth.
So let's talk a little bit about the vertical integration that you have with Berry Fresh, because I think that's going to take us to this acquiring a stake in Berry World. But let's talk about the way that Berry Fresh integrates with Agroberries and how that came to be. And now that you're a, you know, 100% owner of that brand in the marketplace, talk a little bit about, you know, how you see that interrelationship with your Agroberries business as the parent company.
Agroberries started as grower and ship of our own product and products from other growers, and Berry Fresh is obviously the marketing arm. So I would say within the vertical integration, we have like different areas. We have genetics, we have farming, and then we have a marketing. Berry Fresh is the marketing side for the Americas. So Berry Fresh does all of the sales of what we grow through the Americas, basically. So Berry Fresh is the marketing side, and Agroberries, although it's the parent company, takes care more of the growing side, all of the farming in all of the different countries where we grow. So it's, I would say, just separate Agroberries farming and Berry Fresh is the marketing, although Agroberries owns 100% of Berry Fresh.
And talk a little bit about that growth that you've seen at Berry Fresh, because I think you're saying that, you know, Berry Fresh represents more than just Agroberries now in the marketplace with, you know, the different farms that are helping to complement your round supply. So talk a little bit more about that. And then you know, the decision to go with Berry World relative to the fact that you've got this, you know, growing enterprise in Berry Fresh and a brand there that has, you know, grown successfully. And I just wanted you to share a little bit about that for our audience to just understand how much has Berry Fresh grown since you've been involved with Berry Fresh and the future of Berry Fresh in relationship to this new brand acquisition, the stake that you've got now in Berry World.
Yeah, as I was mentioning earlier, we acquired a percentage of Berry Fresh in 2005. And at that time, I think Berry Fresh was a small company representing growers in North America and importing a little bit of berries. Since that time, I think Berry Fresh has grown more than 10 times. And like 5 years after that, we acquired the remaining stake. So we became 100% owners like in 2010. So I think we've been blessed with being on the right fruit. I mean, other fruits you see are very steady. This has continually grown and grown. And we were there, and we had the right icing setting through our own production, which always helps because you can offer something reliable. I mean, food safety and production and all of that. When you grow a big percentage of your own fruit you're offering, I think it's a bonus and a plus. for consumers.
All right. Well, I want to talk more about, again, your acquisition of a stake in Berry World, among other things. But first, it's time for our crop report. The beginning of our domestic season is just getting started this month in Florida, and we have some reports continuing to come in from Peru, Chile, and Mexico. So here, once again, is your blueberry crop report.
It's time for your blueberry crop report, an update on crop conditions and markets from important blueberry growing areas. Today, you'll hear from Darren Wheeler in Georgia, Brittany Lee in Florida, and Danielle Bustamante in Peru. This was recorded on March 7th, 2024.
My name is Darren Wheeler. I'll be giving the crop report for Georgia. So for the update, the crop is well into bloom and out of dormancy with excellent uninterrupted chill hours through the winter that have accumulated to over 500 chill hours in most growing regions. Earliest varieties in the southern regions are at or at past full bloom, with lots of fruit set. Good weather for bee flight and pollination has been minimal, but most growers have had an easy access to bees and have overstocked beehives on their farms. Pollination will be better assessed in 2 to 3 weeks, but looks good so far. Overall, initial crop estimates are strong, an up 10% increase over the 2023 crop. Timing this year will likely be a few days later than 23. Possibly as much as a week later. All indications are that Georgia will start week of week 13 or 14. Georgia crop totals for 2023 were 78 million fresh, 17 million frozen. The 2024 estimate is 85 million fresh and 20 million frozen, totaling 105 million. And that is my report.
So Florida is reporting across the board great pollination and fruit set. Weather looks fantastic throughout the central and south central regions for the upcoming week. North Florida, there's a few extra days of rain up here. USDA is reporting 60,000 pounds of movement so far for the Florida crop. We do expect this next week with the great weather and south of the I-4 corridor for that production to significantly increase. South of I-4, most growers have already started picking. If not, they will be picking this week. North Florida should be picking within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Moving forward, North Florida is done pollinating. Almost all growers have moved the bees out and expect to be picking in the North Florida region probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We expect 23 million pounds as a state.
Hello, this is Daniel with a crop report from Peru until the end of week 9 that ran from February 26th to March 3rd. So far, this season that started in week 18 until the current week 9, Peru has shipped a total of 484.5 million pounds of fresh blueberries to the world. That is 22% less volume than what was shipped during the same period last season. The US remains as the main destination for Peruvian blueberries, representing 55% of the total shipments so far, followed by Europe with 29%, China with 12%, and other markets accounting for the remaining 4%. Of the total volume shipped, 10% have been organics. The Peruvian blueberry exports continued to wind down during week 9, totaling 4.3 million pounds, that is 17% less volume than last week. The US market represented 79% of the shipped volume with 3.4 million pounds, that is 14% less volume than the volume shipped last week. This volume should be arriving to the market by the 3rd to 4th week of March. The other markets where Peru shipped blueberries to this week were Europe with 13%, China 7%, and other destinations only 1%. This has been the Peruvian crop report for week 9. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much to our busy growers and colleagues who take time to participate in these reports. As a reminder, you can go to the ushbc.org/data to find our Data and Insight Center to see more about what's happening in the blueberry industry. Again, visit us at ushbc.org/data. All right, let's go back to our conversation with Jorge Andres Varela. Jorge, I want to talk a little bit about this acquisition, the stake in Berry World. Can you talk a little bit about the decision process, the expectations you have with that relationship with that brand, and a little bit more of, again, how that brand then interworks with AgroBerry's interest in Berry Fresh here in the Americas?
Sure. Yeah. We built this a vertically integrated company, especially in the Americas. We grow fruit in the Americas, and then we have very fresh selling and doing all of the marketing. So I would say this worked really well, and we had a good percentage of the North American market. We were doing some sales in Europe, but basically the Peruvian, Chilean, and Argentina fruit. So it was like a seasonal thing. We had half of the year covered in Europe with our own production, but we were missing the other half. So we started a few years ago trying to look for a partner there, similar to what we did in the US 10, 15 years ago when we acquired Berry Fresh. We were looking for opportunities, and through the years, we didn't find the right fit. So in 2018, we started our own company called Agroberries Europe, based in Holland, that was basically doing sales for our production in South America. And we kept like looking for someone that could help us build the domestic, the Northern Hemisphere production. It took some time, and we started our own farms in Morocco as well, meanwhile, because we recognized the year-round thing is very important. So we started farming in Morocco. And then through the years, looking for different options, Berry World came across. Berry World was looking for partners. We had some conversations, and we decided to get a stake there on the European part of the business. So now we own part of Berry World. Berry World is maybe the largest distributor of berries in Europe, both in UK and Europe. So what we see there is an integration to someone that's very, very big in terms of distributing berries. So there's a lot of opportunities with new customers, and they have a genetic portfolio that's very, very interesting for us. We believe that genetics is a thing that's going to move this industry moving forward. The right genetics are the ones that are going to make the difference between one another's. Berry World has a big portfolio of genetics, as well as a very big and diverse customer base in the UK and Europe.
Well, I think this is a good segue into talking about what you see as the future. You mentioned genetics, and you obviously can see, you know, where, you know, year-round access or year-round supply in the marketplaces globally certainly makes a huge difference. That's been the success story for the U.S. Once we started to see, you know, that we had a counter-seasonal supply and the consistency of that supply over time. You know, I want to talk a little bit about how you see the future going. You still sound very bullish on the future ahead. We've got some challenges. We've got, you know, a tremendous amount of supply that didn't show up in 2023. You know, we certainly saw something take place that I think was both unprecedented, and nobody was prepared for quite what took place. But that fruit's going to come. But I want to hear your thoughts on that. You're making strategic investments right now and putting partnerships in place to realize a future that you still see coming. What gets you excited about blueberries going forward?
Yeah, it's as you were mentioning, we didn't get the 23 volume that we were expecting because of the El Nino factor in Peru. So volumes were even below the previous season. But the volume is going to come. There's been a lot of investment, and we're excited because I think not only us, but other people are planting and renewing into better genetics. And I think that's going to give consumers finally a better taste of a value proposition of what they can get. And although consumption has grown a lot, I think there's room for it to grow, especially in some windows of the year. We have to be careful of not overdoing it, as you were mentioning, in some windows of the year. But I think what we have to work is try to get like the 12th month of the year, like a very steady production within different growing regions. I think the industry is moving there. If we can have a steady supply with very, very good quality berries, I think there's still room for growth. What we cannot do is bring berries that don't satisfy expectations for consumers, because that's really going to ruin and affect like a repeated buy.
So talk to me a little bit about what's been your motivation to, you know, support and participate in an organization like USHBC and NABC as the volunteer trade organization. But you have been a leader in that space for some time, both growing the pie and then having better genetics inside that pie. What keeps you motivated in seeing, you know, demand growth through marketing efforts like those that USHBC puts forth?
Yeah, I mean, a united like industry always helps. Everyone does their own marketing. Well, they use your own marketing tools, and that's fine. I mean, every company has to make, we're different, that we have to make differences between, we compete. But finally, all of us, we have to follow the same trend. I mean, the consumption only will grow if we do things right. I was telling you genetics before, but industry relations is very important as well. And we have to be united. There's different growing regions, sometimes a little bit of tension between different growing regions. But finally, we're all looking for the same thing. We're looking to increase consumption, to offer a better product to consumers. And I think we have to work together. We have to work together. We've done the MOU, as you were mentioning. And I think that helps. I mean, an industry that works together finally is going to be much more successful than everyone doing their own thing on their own.
And I think that's one thing that has been impressive about blueberries, even if you look at other commodities that either are, you know, kind of monolithic in its production regions or have been broken up because of those production regions. You know, blueberries is in a unique position to, you know, kind of unite the world's production in a way that keeps that continuity and understanding about what's important going forward. But what do you see? I mean, we have as an organization been at USHBC very successful at positioning the health message with blueberries. But what's next for blueberries? What gear do you see us shifting into next from a marketing perspective to, you know, pull that group in? Today, we're at about 49% of households consuming 6.4 pounds a year. What do we need to do from your perspective to drive the category into the future that helps to both maintain the value that people have with how they see blueberries, while at the same time accommodating for the supply that you're suggesting is coming?
Yeah, health, as you were mentioning, is crucial, and that has been proven. And that USHBC, for example, has been a key factor. They are making, through their health, a lot of investigation, working with universities, with other people, and that obviously helps a lot. And we have to continue doing that and see all of the health benefits. Convenience, there's a lot of snacking in modern days. So I would say health and convenience have taken us where we are right now. So what's next? I would say availability, and that I think we're pretty much there. I mean, now we already have like a year-round availability, which also helps to be like on a daily diet if someone really wants to be eating blueberries every day, which is very healthy and convenient. Well, it's available, so that also helps. I would say next is genetics. I mean, we have to improve the quality and the product we're offering. People that are not like heavy users, which will continue eating blueberries anyway, we can bring a lot of new people. If we offer them a great experience, they will start coming in. And so we have to have the right product, a good eating experience, genetics, and year-round availability of that high quality product. And I think we're going to bring new consumers into this increase at 49%. There's exciting varieties right now, and there are and the others coming and the pipeline. Now there's good breeders working on that. And obviously that's going to make a big difference, I think.
Absolutely. Well, and the effort to invite those consumers to the category again, to experience what genetics are available today and are going to be available. I often say to folks that I talk to that, you know, if you're enjoying blueberries today, just wait 5 years. You know, or wait 10 years.
Right. And that's on a mature market like North America. But if you take like new markets, I mean, you see what's happening in China, for example, and what's going to happen probably in Southeast Asia. There's a lot of new markets that are beginning to eat blueberries, and it's been growing a lot. So people are enjoying blueberries as well. So although some places seem to be like overdoing a little bit on production, there's a lot of new markets still unexplored, and I think that's also going to help a lot for growers that are increasing their availability.
Well, what are the things that concern you? What are the things that you think about that, you know, are watchouts for the industry?
Oversupply, obviously, during some times of the year is concerning, and we have to be very careful with that. As always, food safety. I mean, we have to be very, very careful with that. And we don't want to have something going on blueberries and ruin the trend we have right now. Everyone's talking good things about blueberries. We really have to be careful with food safety. I would say that's one of the issues. Everyone should really be very, very concerned and will take necessary measures to avoid any problems.
So just kind of going back to the top of our conversation, Jorge, you know, you're from Chile, company's founded in Chile. Lots of things have changed for Chile, especially in relationship to what Peru's done and the growth that we've seen until recently. Talk to me about the future of Chile from your perspective. There's lots of conversations about, you know, either the replanting, almost reorganizing, or, you know, folks just not seeing Chile as a production region to develop in any further. So where is Chile right now from your perspective? Where does that stand in the folio of production regions going forward?
Yeah, Chile was early in the game, so growers benefit of a lot of demand for the first years. But Chile, when we started, no one was really talking about genetics or really anything that looked like the blueberry could be sold at a very high price many years ago. So growers were very profitable. So then the industry started growing a lot, and there was a lot of new acreage, but maybe not in the right regions or not with the right varieties, or not the right techniques, growing techniques, or even post-harvest. So then about, I would say, 5 years ago, we reached like the peak as an industry in Chile. And then there were other countries that started producing, like Peru, that you were mentioning, that got into the beginning of the season window, the Chilean window. And then by the end of the season, we had Mexico with the early production. So Chile was a little bit compressed with the late Peruvian production and the early Mexican production. So it was, instead of having like 3 months or 4 months for Chile on their own, we got down to maybe 2 months or 6 weeks, where really the volumes are not enough, so Chile can fill some availability issues. It's difficult in Chile. And from this last 5 years, as you see, volume have been coming down yearly. There's growers that have decided to switch to other commodities, such as cherries, that have been very successful. So some growers simply just left blueberries, so there's less acreages. Others are doing some replanting with new varieties or just leaving some regions that don't really work well. But it's tough for Chile. There's a lot of challenges because of weather issues. Chile produces basically during the summertime in December and January. Those are the two big weeks, Southern Hemisphere summer. Temperatures tend to be very high. There's sometimes rains as well. So there's challenges that other countries such as Peru, for example, don't experience. Peru has a very steady weather, no rains, no frost. So it's I would say easier to produce. Labor is also an issue. Chile obviously developed a lot during the last 20 years, and there's a lack of labor not only for blueberries but all agriculture commodities. So it's the costs are higher. So it's not easy. But I think Chile, it's a smaller window. I mean, if you have the right varieties in the right window, or the right growing regions, I think there's still a chance there for Chile, but it has to be like made right. I mean, it's a window different than the one we had many years ago, definitely. So all of the northern area and maybe the extreme southern area of Chile growing regions are going to be really threatened by late Peru and early Mexico. But in the center of the country, I think we still have an opportunity if we grow like the right berries with the right genetics. But I think Chile still has a window, a smaller window, but I think still some opportunity to complement for Americas between Peru and Mexico.
Sure. And so does that put, you know, your company Agroberries, you know, founded there in Chile, you know, still bullish on those 6 weeks, the production region there? Or are you also continuing to look elsewhere for, you know, future production regions?
Yeah, our growth during the last years have been outside of Chile. We started in Chile. We have a farm. We still have a farm there. But our growth clearly has been in Mexico, in Peru, and recently in Morocco. We're doing some replacement of varieties, but we're not really growing in Chile more than what we have. So volumes for us, as well as the rest of our competitors, have been coming down slightly during the last 3 years. If we want to be a global company, we need to be where opportunities are. And Chile doesn't offer that big opportunity, especially at the beginning of the season and late in the season. In the middle, yeah, I think we have some room there, but it's going to be a shorter season than what it was before.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that some of the growers there are moving to other crops. What are those other crops that you see growers leaving blueberries for?
Well, cherries, definitely cherries in the, that's one of them. And then you have a lot of, on the nuts, you have hazelnuts and walnuts. And I would say all of the nut family is because of labor. It's obviously machine harvested, so it's much easier. And then on the fruit side, I would say cherries that have been very successful with their shipments into China. Some blueberry farms, and I didn't mention this just 2 minutes ago, but have converted into frozen. I mean, they basically what they're doing is machine harvesting the berries and sending them to the freezers, selling them to freezers. So they've, although the areas are still there, and maybe the farms are still there, but instead of shipping to fresh, most of the farm, only part of that is going to fresh at the beginning of the season, and then the second part of the season is going for frozen. That's, I would say, Chile is like getting close to what happens in the U.S., in the Pacific Northwest, for example, when you have a combination of fresh and frozen. I think Chile will move into that different than what's happening today in places like Peru or Mexico, where almost everything is packed fresh as much as you can. Some farms go 100% for frozen, others are combined. And so, yeah, frozen can help some of those growers that still are growing blueberries.
Well, and the reason I ask about those other commodities is just as you look ahead for the future of blueberries and you look at the other ways that either commodities collectively have worked together or maybe, you know, particular varieties and brands have worked together. But what inspires you out there that's been done by others that you'd like to see blueberries be more like? Is there an example out there that you always think about or discuss or you'd like to see, you know, blueberries becoming, you know, more demand driven with examples that you've seen out there in the marketplace by others?
Yeah, avocados would be one of them, especially in North America and Europe. And then you have cherries in China. Both have grown, well, exponentially. They've been through a lot of our marketing campaigns. We were speaking about what USHBC does, for example. This is when industries really got together. And then you have these boards that do all of the marketing and all that research and others. Avocados is a very, very good example in North America, for example. And then cherries in China. Obviously, you don't see much of the Chilean cherries in the US. But if you see China, what's happening and what they've done as an industry, it's great. They've been able to grow consumption many times. It's still growing. This year, with all of the challenges, weather challenges that South America had, they even grew the category. They had more cherries shipped. So yeah, I would say those are two good examples.
Well, as you're moving forward, you've got a lot of things that you're focused on and changes for agroberries. But what's next for agroberries? I mean, you've got this, you know, the steak and berry world. You've got Berry Fresh. What's next for agroberries? What are you seeing as a strategic long term vision for your company?
I personally think there's still room for growth in berries. Well, there's new regions to grow. As I was telling you earlier, we started in Morocco last year. This is our first year. We're already harvesting those blueberries and shipping them into Europe. So there's new regions to grow, new regions to sell. I think there's Asia for sure. China, we started doing China last year with Peruvian blueberries, and it was quite a successful season. Southeast Asia, I think, is next. And then renewing into new genetics in places that we started earlier. Obviously, all of the new plantings are with very new genetics. But yeah, there's still exciting things on the berries. Someone was asking me a few months ago if we were thinking about going into new commodities. And I say, no, I mean, there's so much going on berries. There's still exciting things happening. So I think we'll just remain within what we know. We know how to do berries. We've been in berries for number of years, and I think there's still a growth in the category.
Absolutely. You know, what I share about the blueberry industry, it's always interesting just to give the comparison that table grapes for consumers have been around for people for thousands of years. And something like berries has really only been grown commercially. And so if you've got, you know, any stake in it as a company, you're still in its infancy relative to, you know, a lot of the things that consumers globally have otherwise seen or had or been able to have access to. So I hear you. There's still a lot of room for both creativity, room for the growing demand, working with leaders like yourself, and certainly the investment that it takes. Those are things that we have to keep talking about and always be talking about. What's it going to take? But I appreciate your leadership, Jorge. I've always had an admiration for, you know, your leadership within the industry and the work you do to help kind of grow your part and at the same time plug into the whole. And I always appreciate that about you. So I appreciate your time on the show. Is there anything else before I let you go that you'd like to share?
Well, one of the things that are also exciting is innovation. I mean, there's a lot of innovation moving on. Labor is a big issue in places like the U.S., Mexico and Chile, for example. People are doing a lot of work in terms of maybe machine harvest and stuff like that, because that's going to become a real issue if we continue growing the category. And obviously on the pack house, there has been a lot of innovation. There's optical sorters now. So there's been a lot of work done on the post-harvest. We need now to go to the pre-harvest or harvest in order to make things easier. So yeah, I would say innovation is another thing that is important moving on.
Well, and last but not least, I got to ask, what's your favorite variety of blueberries?
Well, it's been changing through the years, but I would say the latest Sequoia Pop from Fort Creek has been an amazing variety. That's one of the latest. We're growing that in Peru, Mexico, and Morocco, and it's been outstanding in terms of the quality, crunchiness, size. It ships really well if you want to send it to places like China. So it's I would say that's the latest. But I would say most of the varieties are really, really good.
Again, I appreciate your time today. I appreciate I get to see your team in the field occasionally when I'm out traveling, and I always enjoy running into them. You've got a great team, and I just appreciate, again, your support and leadership within the industry. So thank you for joining me on the Business of Blueberries today.
No, thank you, Casey. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that's it for episode 164. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more innovation, collaboration, family, and hard work right here on the Business of Blueberries.